You are listening to a Sustainable World Radio podcast. Sustainable World Radio brings you in-depth interviews, news, and commentary about positive solutions to environmental challenges. Solutions that adhere to the permaculture ethics of earth care, people care, fair share. Are you interested in learning more about permaculture projects around the globe? How to plant a food forest? Restorative design or ethnobotany? Then stay tuned for Sustainable World Radio. I'm your host and producer, Jill Cloutier. Good morning, Larry Santoyo. It's an honor to have you here on Sustainable World.
Thanks for having me. It's been a while.
I know. You know, we met. I was trying to figure out when we met. I think it was the first time I ever even heard of permaculture was from your weekend course at the Community Environmental Council in Santa Barbara.
Oh, yeah.
And that was when Wes Rowe and I were doing the Kale Not Jail Juvenile Hall Project. And remember, we went from these really nice, fancy Santa Barbara mansions, and then I remember being so embarrassed to bring you to our site, which was overgrown with all these medicinal herbs we had planted and these kind of straggly fruit trees, and you made us feel so good, and you loved our project.
Remember how useful it was, though? I mean, it was like a breath of fresh air after some of those higher end things that were beautiful, but almost no production whatsoever. It was like a stuff for the green bin is
yeah.
All.
Yeah, that's so true. And I remember that night we all went out to dinner and I thought, I think I found my tribe. I just felt so at home.
Well, great. I'm glad I could have been a part of that. That is a great thing. And you've been doing great work ever since.
And so have you. And that's what I want to talk to you about today. There's so many people that know about your work and that want to know more about what you do. I also wanted to tell you that I think one of your greatest skills that I really enjoy going to your talks, and I did my PDC with you, is that I feel like you teach, you're such a great, talented teacher, but you're also as funny as a stand-up comic. And so you're so skilled at making people laugh and learn at the same time, which is fabulous. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you for noticing. It's difficult, teaching like that. We break every educator's rule out there. You know, we give people 1,000 new concepts every hour, and it's difficult to keep people kind of awake and stuff. And no professor I know stands and lectures for 7 or 8 hours like we do.
So, Larry, I saw you speak earlier this year. It was a great presentation, and you proclaimed at that presentation that the future is abundant. And this is a different message from a lot of the other lectures that I've been to and presentations, which focus on scarcity and a lot of times fear. Why do you say the future is abundant? Tell our listeners about that.
The future is abundant in my eyes because that's the evidence that we have. You know, the planet has evolved to where now we are included. And every time we look around and see or try to search for scarcity, we really do find a lot of abundance. When we start comparing things to the past or comparing things to old ways or even destructive ways, some of those things are beginning to fade and some of those systems are beginning to fail. And I think that's a good thing. I think that there is nothing but hope for the future, and evidenced by, you know, hundreds and possibly thousands of people joining the sustainability movement every day. It seems like no matter where we go around the world, there's people that are having this conversation at this very same moment everywhere. It's beautiful.
So you're saying the future is abundant. What role does permaculture play in that abundant future?
First of all, I think that permaculture is a design science that whose role has taken center stage in a lot of things, and mostly in a way of thinking about solutions and a way of problem solving. I don't know that it really has a better role to play. And I can't think of any other group. I can't think of any other issue, any other topic that is so far reaching and so all encompassing. I think that it has already played and will continue to play an important role. And I would, to tell you the truth, I'd like to see it be sort of a background thing or almost never spoken about, that it just is happening. You know, you don't talk about, you know, we don't do a play-by-play narrative of our whole day.
Unless you're on Facebook.
Yeah, right. I think that permaculture has an important role, but I want it to be more of an intrinsic understanding, an intrinsic display of people's knowledge of permaculture design, which is really, you know, kind of an outline of us as human beings. You know, I often say in my classes that I really want it to one day be embarrassing that we would have had to take a class in a reasonable grasp of the obvious, you know, natural systems around us that we've seen all of our lives. And then yet, when we look at them and examine them, we're so suddenly fascinated by it. And when you think about it, it should be kind of embarrassing that we don't just know it and just perform that way. Permaculture is important. A lot of times when we, you know, people talk about mainstreaming it, and I don't really know that that's a good objective. I think that it just needs to be kind of intrinsic. Everything that goes mainstream is just kind of perverted and diluted, and, you know, I don't know that we aren't going fast enough. People say that, you know, what do we do to make it faster? And it's like, man, if you just saw this 20 years ago or even 10 years ago, you would think that it's hauling ass. I mean, it's really been taken off. And I think slowly and organically is always the best way, as evidenced by nature. And that, you know, we're not forcing it on anybody. It's not, you know, the accelerated growth that we have had in the past, you know, to use nature as a metaphor, has been trimmed off. You know, it was too fast, too weak, too, you know, that kind of stuff. So I think that, you know, maintaining an even keel and a posture that, you know, we're allowing nature to direct us is really the key to success.
And Larry, for listeners who may be listening to this podcast and think, well, what exactly is permaculture? Could you give your definition of permaculture? And then I want to talk a bit about how you say permaculture is not gardening, and more about how we don't do permaculture, we use permaculture.
Yeah, I think that that's an important concept to grasp, that, you know, you don't architecture a house, you use architecture, you know, and you could be any kind of designer to and still have that understanding. Permaculture design is a discipline of design. It's a thought process. I do think that, you know, it's a mistake to understand permaculture solely about gardening, although it is right on target to use permaculture design and use the garden as a metaphor. Nature, it gardens. Everything in nature gardens. We have plenty of evidence for that, that it's cultivating the next thing and improving its own environment. And permaculture is a lot like that. It gets us to think that way. You know, I talk about how you don't do permaculture, you use permaculture in what you do, and it opens it all up. You can use permaculture design if you're a doctor, use permaculture design if you're a school teacher, use permaculture design. And of course you can do it if you're a gardener, you can use it as, you know, a information base for decision making in gardening. But my soundbite is that permaculture is decision-making protocols for critical thinking and problem-solving.
And so give us an example of that. How would someone use permaculture to solve a problem, other than their garden, maybe?
Yeah, it's kind of thinking outside the box. And, you know, and I know that that's overused and overplayed, but it isn't in this sense, in that we need to kind of unlearn in order to relearn. You know, you kind of have to empty the glass to be able to fill it up. The idea is that let's go back to gardening. See, that I'm probably more guilty than anybody for having people think that permaculture is about gardening, because I always say it isn't, and then I go back to the garden. But it is a beautiful metaphor, and that's what I love about it. You know, that when we talk about gardening, I try to get people to focus on what it is that they are really doing, what it is that they are actually doing. What Buckminster Fuller used to say is the highest generalization. Ask yourself, what is the highest generalization? So in gardening, what we are really doing, when you understand it, is you are managing soil. So the big surprise comes in is not that you are managing soil, but the way that you think about production, the way that you think about what you're trying to produce really gets then put into a category of being a byproduct. The produce is a byproduct of soil management. So in permaculture thought, the way you use permaculture for gardening is that what you need to do is create the conditions for vegetables to happen. Mm. It's physics. You set it into motion. You manage soil in this case. You feed the soil biota. You maintain the temperature, the cation exchange capacity, everything that we know about soil temperatures and on and on. You maintain that, and you cannot help but have healthy produce as a byproduct. You've set a process into motion and it has to play out. It has to complete a circle and cycle of earth flow. It really is. It's amazing once we start looking at things like that and putting things into a dynamic equation instead of a static linear equation for problem solving.
And so you're creating the conditions for your desired outcome to occur.
Right. And it kind of happens as a byproduct. And, the big thing is that you're doing one thing as a motion, but what you are getting is other things that spin off, just like moving down a stream. The stream is moving a body of water from high elevation to another, but in the process, it has cut and carved and carried particles. And then all of a sudden, the byproduct of that activity is a nice silted basin area that creates the conditions for, plants to happen, and on and on. We have to realize that nature is a process and it's the byproducts that what we are after. And I always talk about how in sustainability, it is about creating byproducts, not about buying products. There you go, another soundbite.
Well, in the lecture that I saw, you mentioned a few times asking that question, how would nature do it? And this was another quote, all that we need to figure out, nature has solved. Can you talk a bit about that with the energy issue that we have right now with fossil fuel shortages? How does nature deal with energy, and how does nature deal with these major issues that are facing us right now?
Well, one of the things that I am trying to adopt and adapt to myself is the principle of that nature catches and stores energy. And when you think about it, nature is, again, collecting solar energy in leaves of trees, let's say, one of the ways that it does it, collecting solar energy, and that converts it to sugars and energy for the plant, and then it stores it. It stores it in all through its own system, in the roots, in the soil, and again, another illustration of byproducts that we're using. The apple is a byproduct of the tree. We don't really harvest the tree, we harvest one of its byproducts. So when we think about how nature solves things, it can give us that template, a direction to go to where we could continuously harvest or use energy without destroying the system that it's coming from. And I'm not just talking about solar energy. I think that this whole fear thing about peak oil is really more of an opportunity for us to realize that it's a shout out for diversifying. That's a big thing in sort of the systems thinking is really what we're talking about in permaculture design, but diversifying all the ways that things happen. One of our principles is multiple elements for single functions. And same thing goes for energy. So we should have several different ways of producing energy and fuel. And not only that, but maybe there's new and different fuel using apparatus that we could be using, a compressed air motor or engine, or things like that are already out there that could also be worked on.
And this brings us into that realm of observation, observing nature, and also biomimicry. But maybe tell us your thoughts on biomimicry and observing nature.
Sure. I think that ultimately what we come to is that question from biomimicry is how would nature do it? If we're trying to do something like sort things or, you know, make tiny holes in something, you know, nature does all of those things already. You know, I saw this a laser that was making tiny holes compared to a material that they injected just simple air bubbles that also did the same thing with, you know, without laser technology, you know, and you know, different things like that. The idea of, you know, being able to look at nature, one of the things that we synthesize from nature, and that's really what permaculture ultimately does, is gives us guidelines that we observe from all of the diversity of nature. Commonalities do occur, and it's those commonalities that permaculture synthesizes its principles of design on. And one of those things is diversity. So again, getting back to the fuel, you know, if we had looked to nature, looking at how different things are, you know, are propelled, we would be, you know, designing the shape of things differently. And that's also starting to happen. You know, there's propellers and there's impellers now that you can put on boats and planes that have, you know, that use less energy. I saw farming equipment that uses less energy just because of the design of the implement. You know, looking to nature has always proven, you know, to give us something in the right direction.
So we're looking at nature, we're learning, we're observing, and observation is a big part of permaculture. What is our place in this system?
Well, I think that that's an interesting question. You know, the short answer is we have a very small place. You know, the problem is we have a really big lever. You know, our opposable thumbs, our brains, you know, it hasn't always served us well, but it has served us well enough that, you know, we can make things and use things. And, you know, but it's really the understanding of natural systems that helps guides that. You know, let me just say that people always want to, you know, they always come to the classes and people will say, oh, we want to get involved in hands-on things. You know, I learn by doing, and it's like, well, that's what I want to keep you from. You know, it's like we need to get through the theory of why these things are working and why we're choosing these techniques and technologies before you go out with a bulldozer or even a sharp stick. You know, I want people to understand that we have made mistakes. Let's back up, slow down, look at nature, and then go back at it. Plus, in the past, you know, when we first started teaching design courses, it was almost a break from the field, from the audience. Very few people, you know, would say, oh, I want to go work out in the field as, you know, a hands-on activity. Again, it's kind of embarrassing, but people in the early days worked in the field. And I don't think that was, you know, really what they were dreaming of when they were sitting out of the cold and, you know, in a warm classroom, you know, oh, please let me go out and work, you know. But when they did go out to work, they went out with, like you said earlier, with permaculture eyes, and it changes things. Your decision-making capacity is different. It's better. It's richer because it involves more things, a holistic way to look at things.
Well, it's not acting just on impulse, I think, too.
And when it is, you know, when it does act on impulse, it's an intrinsic response that you're calling forth from you know, maybe a more stable spot, a more primal spot. You know, but just kind of getting back to the energy thing, you know, people talk about biomimicry and they criticize, you know, biofuels and they criticize all these different things. And I think that, again, people are putting it into a linear equation instead of a dynamic equation where it belongs. You know, you have to heat certain elements in order to produce biofuels. And, you know, people say that it takes more electricity or it takes more gasoline, it takes more energy to make biodiesel than the biodiesel can give us. You know, and that, again, is starting from cold, starting from zero, but the world isn't that way. Our community isn't that way. Someplace in our town, there is something that is already hot, who has byproduct of heat. We could start there. That's holistic design. That's holistic thinking. that is putting it where it belongs. That is, you know, all these different things that I can tell you about that are permaculture design principles. You know, of course we wouldn't start from zero cold when there's already something hot. We're holistic designers.
Well, Larry, how do we go from our compartmentalized thinking to this expansive thinking? How do you get to the place where you are, where you automatically think that way?
Well, I think that, you know, a little bit of training, taking a design course is not a bad idea. I think a little bit of, you know, of self-reflecting and, you know, critical analysis of ourselves. The other really important principle that took me a while, trust me, to really get was just, you know, accept feedback, right? That's one of the things that we see in nature, that it's always adjusting to feedback. So, you know, built in to permaculture design decision-making is feedback loops. So that means, you know, if we come up with a design, then we hand it to somebody in the hopes that they can see something, a hole in it or something that can be improved, you know, and that's rare in a lot of design disciplines, you know, and here we are seeking out what we can't see because there's a diversity of eyes on it or diversity of talents put to it, you know, and as we do that, we take those on ourselves. It becomes muscle memory to us. Oh, I didn't think to look for that. Oh, I didn't think to do that. You know, and now we do. So it's sort of experience. That's the other thing that I want to come back around to, gaining some experience at these things.
And gaining experience in a safe way. When I was in a class at City College and we were going to design rainwater harvesting, we were going to catch water and, you know, the whole way of holding the water on the land. And then Wes Rowe, I was talking to him about it. This was at the top of, I don't know if you've been to City College, but it's on this big cliff area. And he said, well, that would be a great idea, but not there because I think it was shale. And he said, you just cause a massive mudslide. And I remember thinking, like, I don't really know what I am doing. And that was...
again, it's like, it's a testament to the design course, getting the theory behind the practice. It's not just about the practice.
Right. It's a permaculture crime. I would have, could have ended up in jail.
There's a lot of them. There's a lot of them. And I've got some stories of, you know, young, zealous permaculture enthusiasts who have taken, you know, a 2-week course and think that now they can go operate a bulldozer or, you know, even a shovel could be dangerous. And that's what these guys did with picks and shovels. They dug swales, which is one of the techniques and technologies that we talk about in permaculture design courses, because it's easy, because it's simple, because it makes sense. Created an infiltration basin by digging a hole, you know, a basin and a berm, you know, all these different things. But people somehow, for some reason, get really excited about this and think they have to go save the swales and, you know, carve swales all over the place, including steep slopes on top of clay, which, you know, it's like, that is just, it's antithetical to the process of observation, you know, intervening to, you know, create, capture and store a resource. You know, it's, you know, I tell this story about how years ago I built a straw bale house, and somebody wrote an article about it, and somebody in Hawaii called me up and said, oh, I read this article, I want a straw bale house. You know, can you come to Hawaii and build it? And I said, sure, as much as I want to go to Hawaii, I can build you a house, but it probably won't be straw. And, you know, they were taken back by that, you know, oh, we want this eco-hip thing. You know, I said that in permaculture design, you arrive at a solution. You don't impose the solution. And we arrived at straw bale technology, straw bale technique, straw bale material, because of what nature was directing us towards. In this particular location, it got extremely cold in the winter, and it got extremely hot in the summertime. So we needed thermal insulation. We needed insulation from the outside elements. And in Hawaii, you don't really need that. So we would choose a different material. So I was trying to convince this guy to hire me, but at the same time, trying to educate him that, you know, building with, you know, super insulation was an inappropriate technology. You know, it's about where and when. It's not just about the technique and the technology.
And that's where the feedback would come in handy, because hopefully you'd have more experienced people on your team.
Yeah, but I also have heard and read about, permaculture designers out there that, do that kind of stuff. I work in Haiti and I saw horrific projects that are damaging and unhealthy and possibly, dangerous and deadly. The way that they've, adopted and adapted a technique and technology from one region of the world, probably where they learned it or read a book about it, and then they impose it on another part of the world instead of arrive at the same thing through physics and biology, but using the new space itself, every different space. You start with the outside energies of nature and then arrive at a solution.
And so for people that are graduating from a PDC, and you have one coming up, we'll talk about that soon. What is your advice for them to become a more seasoned designer? What's a safe way to become a good permaculture designer?
Well, I think that there's not a safe way. It's by making a lot of mistakes. I took 5 design courses before I started teaching or talking about design or doing anything like that. And it really has been set up that the way that I learned, and I worked with Bill Mollison, the sort of recognized founder of permaculture design movement or whatever you want to call it. But I traveled around with him and I worked with him for a while and I taught with him. And it really is kind of set up to where, at least our students with the Permaculture Institute and now with the new Permaculture Academy, if you've taken one of our courses, then you're welcome to come back to another course. Just pay the hard costs of that. But the idea is that we want people to become experienced and educated. And every time you hear it, or a new teacher or a new place, or there's just a different way of looking at things. We do also have, and it's been a part of the permaculture design course curriculum for 25 or 30 years, that once you take the designer course, it's just an introduction. So it then gives you the opportunity to embark on a 2-year apprenticeship program. And after 2 years of full-time work or the equivalent thereof, some people take many more than 2 years to get that experience. Then you take, with your field director, you go to the Permaculture Institute with your portfolio and apply for a diploma in applied permaculture in education, or if you're a teacher, or site development, or whatever it happens to be. But there, it, you know, it's a process where you will gain experience, and working with mentors is the way that we have set that out.
Well, you have a great teaching staff, and this is the new City of Angels Permaculture Academy, and you have a course coming up starting tomorrow, I believe. So I'm so glad you fit this interview in. And tell our listeners about the way you teach, and also how the weekend courses, which are so great for working people. I think you pioneered those as well.
Yeah, well, me with a group of people. First, let me say that tomorrow, October 5th and 6th, is the first weekend of our 14th year teaching in Los Angeles. My 24th year teaching permaculture, but our 14th year here in Los Angeles. And obviously, the focus is urban, but again, decision-making protocols are taught so you can use what you learn anywhere in the world, and we've proven it over and over again. The idea of the weekend format was kind of developed, and I took a lot of criticism for it early on. But the first time that anyone ever cut up the program, which was at one time a 3-week program, and then it got cut down to 2 weeks. But it was an intensive, 2-week intensive every day, every night, learning new stuff from either the same or more people all the time. So what we did, what decided to do was cut it the same class up. It's the identical curriculum. We just do it 2 days in a row, and then we take a break, and then we do it 2 more days so that if you are working or have kids or whatever, it's easier to get through the program. Now, our program is 1 weekend a month for 6 months. And of course, some people have to miss some of those weekends. And if you can make it up either at another course somewhere else, or come back the next year, then we'll still work with you in getting a certification once you get all of the requirements done.
Yeah, and your teaching team is phenomenal. It's Larry Santoyo, you, the wonderful Larry, Toby Hemenway, John Valenzuela, and I know Scott Pittman is part of your team. I don't know about for this course, but he has been.
I can't remember if they all came to your class, but I've been working with these guys for a long time. The good thing about being old at this is that I know just about everybody that's been teaching for 20 years. And a lot of people are really good friends of mine, all those people that you mentioned. There's a few other people that I've worked with and love working with, including Penny Livingston and Jude Hobbs. Brock Dolman is also involved in a lot of teaching, and we've worked together in the past. And everywhere we go around the world, there's a local talent that we draw in, and we bring in interested people that I think have something to contribute to that area. So I will fly in different friends of mine who are experts in certain things.
And you've taught all around the world, in France, I've seen, and in many different places. And so, I mean, what a great life you have.
Well, everywhere I've ever been, I have been working. So that's kind of an important note there. I don't think I've had a vacation since the 70s, but the idea is that the information is needed. And instead of, 25 people flying from France to work with me, I can go there and, those kinds of things. But yeah, France, we have a project, a couple of them actually. And in Mexico, Highland Cloud Forests of Mexico, really beautiful project that we've been working with, indigenous cooperative that's just amazing, living example, 50, 60-year-old example of permaculture in action. And I say that I teach everywhere around the world, but really I take more notes than anybody, and really I learn from people all around the world. And I think that it gets better and better.
Well, if someone's listening to this and wants to contact you, what is your contact information? How can they get a hold of you and get information on courses?
Go to cityofangelspermaculture.com for more information. And you could find us there and all of our goings on. And also, you could find us on Facebook with Earthflow and Earthflow Design Works and Permaculture Los Angeles.
And one thing that people, listeners, should know is that it says on the website that you're open to payment plans, trades, teacher scholarships, and things like that. That makes it really accessible for people.
Yeah, I think that if you have the time to commit, you should take the course because we are willing and able to accommodate that. We've got payment plans. If you're a teacher, we offer discounts. A lot of times, students will call us up and say, demand a student discount. But I don't offer student discounts because we're all students. But I do offer discounts to people who, transfer knowledge to teachers around the world of any kind. So that's one thing that we do create a scholarship fund for, and we accept donations for that. We teach all over the world. We have projects in Haiti and France and Mexico, and all over the United States. Next year, we're hoping to do six cities and a couple of 2-week intensives in different interesting places in the world, Mexico being one of them. And people could get a hold of me through cityofangelspermaculture.com and get involved, maybe even in their own city. We're always looking for new people and new places to go.
And in a permaculture design course, it's a great way to have people learn new skills. And one of my favorite parts of our PDC was we never did it, but you spoke about playing a game called Why Should We Let You Live? That always makes me laugh. If I'm ever thinking, oh my gosh, I feel a little down or something, I just for some reason, Why Should We Let You Live pops in my head. And I think just keep going, like getting these skills. And one thing too that I always hear your voice in my head when I'm like people are going on and on about peak oil, peak soil, we're doomed, we're doomed. I think you said, what are you going to do? Just roll over and die?
Yeah, it's like, let's get realistic about this. Whatever it is, whatever the stressor is, it's still a good idea to do what we're talking about. To collect rainwater, to manage our city well, to educate our kids, to get all of these things is really what we're talking about. Create the conditions for community to happen. Create the conditions for caring. Create the conditions for all of these things that we want to happen in the world. Not because we fear the future, but because we love the things we love about the present.
Exactly. And can you tell our listeners about Why Should We Let You Live and
Well, it's a game that we end up playing in the design course, and we did do it in your class. We just didn't call it that at that time. The idea is that everybody can contribute something. And there was a line that I use all the time that I stole from one of our friends in that class, from Owen Dell, who said that if you think that you're not wanted, you're not paying attention. People are out there depressed and this and that, and I think it really is true. If people really just knew that we need everybody to play, we need everybody to be involved, and there's something new for everybody to do. And the idea of the game, Why Should We Let You Live, is really based on what do you have to contribute to the community. It was like one of those whisper telephone games where you were supposed to introduce the next student and ask them what do they have to contribute to the community. And one time somebody said, "Why should we let you live?" And then the next person said the same thing when they introduced the next person. So it just kind of stuck, and it's kind of funny. People get upset when I say it, but it's it kind of cuts to the chase, really. What do you have to contribute to the community? And it's like, I always remember that, what it is to be rich is different than we were taught, that we shouldn't be seeking richness. We should be seeking an opportunity to be valuable in our community, not to seek to be rich, but seek to be valuable. And I think that that is ultimately what we're after with permaculture students.
I would love to talk about a fear-free future. That the lecture that I saw you, I think it was earlier this year, you had on your, I think it was a PowerPoint, 2012 has been canceled except for the good parts, which I totally loved with all that hype and hysteria about 2012 and the end of the Mayan calendar. Tell us a bit about your ideas on about a fear-free future and permaculture's role in creating a future worth living.
Well, I think that it's important to understand that we have a lot of solutions, and that it is imperative that people realize that there is a way to figure this out. And even with the current shutdown of the government, it's probably not a bad thing for us to reevaluate the way that that process happens, all of these things, and to gain an understanding of our own skills. I talk about how security, it's the old thing about people want security, and it means so much to different people, individually, but it always boils down to that security is between your ears. Security is you and how well equipped you are to problem solve, no matter what the stressor is, right? And people want this thing to happen, right? And permaculture design addresses a lot of different things, the techniques and technologies of a lot of very practical things, but it also moves into strategies, different strategies about creating our sustainable human settlements, right? That will go on well into the future. And we talk about how there's alternative money systems that we go into. And here in Los Angeles, we started a time bank a few years ago, and now it's the biggest time bank, in the States, with, dozens of branches of it and different towns and all that. So there's strategies that we can play and diversify the way we conduct commerce. That's sort of using permaculture design for social services and economics and local economics. The other thing that we talk about is access to land. People say, "Oh, we don't have any land, we don't have any money." It's like, okay, what are we going to just die, or are we going to like figure it out? You know, we can seek access to land, and we've got all these different strategies for community gardens, for community shelter, you know, and I don't mean like homeless shelters. I mean, just a way for individuals to build, to rethink how we participate in the landscape. And then sort of lastly, you know, we talk about the, you know, the impediments to accomplishing things, and we quickly change it to perceived impediments. What are these perceived impediments? And it really, people often repeat that we don't have any land, we don't have any money, and if we could only all get along, you know, it's another big one. It's funny that people have this feeling that we all need to get along when nothing in natural systems would support that as evidence. You know, there's no evidence about that. You know, it's more like we need to be okay. We need to get along and not getting along, you know, kind of agree to disagree, you know, instead of like trying to make everybody the same. That's not diversity. Allow people a different opinion. Allow people that. You know, a lot of our meetings, you know, that I go to, that I'm invited to, it's like they're talking about diversity, yet every single person in the room has the identical politics and the same dress and the same, you know, container of, you know, the latest hipster drinks or whatever. It's
the
like
young coconuts.
it's a monocrop of eco hipsters, you know, and, you know, but the idea is that, you know, we need to kind of shake loose of just even our own perceptions and really think about, you know, why are we doing it? And I think that an important question in permaculture design courses is to reevaluate sort of our motivation for doing it. Because if you're doing this because you're afraid of the future, you know, that the world is going to end. I mean, what is up with that? You know, it's like ever since man could put a sign on a stick, the world has been ending. But yet that's the only thing that remains constant is that it isn't ending, you know, and maybe people are afraid of having to take responsibility finally for something. And, you know, maybe it's a hope that the world ends so they don't have to be responsible. I don't know. It's crazy. But, you know, to think that the whole world has to get along in order for this to happen has been proved wrong over and over and over again, because we can have small, sustainable working groups. It's happening already. We just need to recognize that it is and relax and allow it and encourage it and feed it some more. You know, we already are participating in this. And with a little information like the permaculture design course offers, you know, we can hone it. We can get better at it and better at it and practice it. Actually gain experience in some of these things, you know. And I think that that's the single most important thing to do is get experience at something. Learn, you know, we teach a, you know, opposable thumb 101 class, you know, where we do a basic electricity, basic carpentry, basic building, basic plumbing, you know, how to harvest rain, how to do, you know, basic things that we did when we were all cave personnel, you know. But the idea is that get out there and learn something, you know. It's like, and I don't even care if it's dangerous. It's like, some of this is going to be hard, and that's fine. Then it's just hard. Then it's, you know, It's a better evening by the campfire. It's a better evening at the boardroom. It's better, you know, it's better conversation if you're scraped, you know, your knuckles doing something, or lost a digit, or lost an eye, or lost an eye from a flying digit while you're out there working with the community. It's like, let's get out there and learn these things.
Oh my gosh, I love it. I think I'm signing up for your PDC.
But the important thing is that if we're doing this because we fear the future, that is when we start making mistakes, you know, because you can track somebody easily who's, you know, operating and making decisions because of fear. You know, if you're afraid somebody's going to come and take your shit because you're afraid of it, it's like you're setting yourself up for somebody to come and take your shit. You know, it's like that's the idea, is that, but if we're doing it because we're confident, if we're embracing the future because, you know, that we are confident about things and that we have a little bit of understanding, then that's a little, you know, that little bit of leverage in our thinking is giant in our problem solving. You know, it's crazy to think about, you know, how we make decisions based on fear versus how we make decisions based on, creativity. And, I really wanted it to become like that, like, oh, we have to, for the revolution kind of thing. And it took me a while to get through that. Maybe, because I'm older now and I've got grandkids, but I kind of want to rush through the revolution. It's going to be clumsy. It's not going to be that messy like I wanted it anyway. So let's just go right into a renaissance. How about that? That we just like create the conditions for creativity, create the conditions for love, create the conditions for, time, spare time, create the conditions for that world we want that includes organic vegetables and clean water and fisheries and, secret surf spots and, on and on and on and on. That is totally possible. That we have to embrace sustainability, not because we fear the future. Let's embrace sustainability because we love the things we love about right now. Everything that we need for a sustainable future, by the way, we already have. There's nothing to invent. There's everything already exists. We're just going to reshuffle and put new connections to existing things.
Wow, that's great. You totally inspire me.
Well, I mean, I think it's important to laugh, but I also laugh to keep from crying.
And what do you do when you look at the environmental situation, the ocean situation? Do you just continue doing the work and moving forward, or?
Exactly. I think that there every front needs to be fought. I'm not trivializing anybody's attempts, nor do I want my work trivialized. Everybody has a place, and whatever your passion is, I will support you. If your work is different than mine, all the better. It's something that I don't eventually have to do myself.
I want to close just with a couple words. If you could tell our listeners about, I think you've been doing some permaculture projects in inner city Los Angeles. If you could tell our listeners about that.
Well, I think that there's a lot of work that we do all over the United States. I went to Haiti to learn about Detroit, and I went to Haiti, the Cité Soleil, which supposed to, supposedly and quite possibly is the most dangerous and poorest areas in the Northern Hemisphere, run by gangs, run by poverty, run by fear, run by a lot of the things that we're discussing. So an incredible place to learn about sort of accelerated human settlement and high density populations and sanitation and cholera and health and all of these things that are actually part of human settlement. So learning in these areas, I was driven, so to speak, to go to places like New Orleans in the Ninth Ward and where we've worked, and in, New York City and in Los Angeles, where we've got the largest, Skid Row population. Detroit, all these different places have commonalities, and that is the quest for human dignity. And I think that it's important to understand that that is something that we need to protect. It's part of caring for the earth, and part of caring for the earth is caring for people. And Bill Mollison taught us that we have to guard human rights, seek peace and guard human rights everywhere. And I think that that's important. And whether we talk about it or, I like to just do it and kind of not talk about it. Although it's interesting as an educator, it's a great place for me to learn and to also see that it's the same dynamics. It's the same problems that we're trying to solve, because I have clients that are, considered high-end clients, both in New York City, in here in Los Angeles, of course. We've got communities like Malibu and Brentwood and Hancock Park, where we work, and Pasadena, all these areas considered sort of well-to-do. But it's interesting how we have the same process of design that applies to everyone, everywhere.
Well, Larry, this has just been wonderful to speak with you. And I wanted to make sure that our listeners, and I think it's been on Facebook now, and it was advice that you gave us at the end of our course.
Oh, sure.
Can you tell our listeners that advice? I think about that as well all the time.
Yeah, I think that a big part of what we do is like I was saying, I used to work for the people of the state of California, and I re retired from public service, but I saw what I considered to be, the beginning of my journey into community development and community economics by really seeing how people treat each other in the world, for like I said, from all different socioeconomic levels and perspectives, and it's uncanny how people, can have such a poor response, something that contributes nothing, that creates problems. Or, I often say that I do believe that there is true evil in the world, but I also have witnessed in those same circumstances, in those very same scenarios, in the very same moments, I've also witnessed the most incredible, the most beautiful, the most powerful and anonymous acts of heroism that I couldn't even imagine it before that. So it's comforting that people to know that people walk among us that do that. So that's what I learned, was that, blame no one, expect nothing, and still go out and do epic shit.
Wonderful. That kind of sums up everything. A great motto for life, I'm telling you. Well, Larry Santoyo, is there anything else you want to add or any thoughts that you have that we didn't talk about that you'd want to share with our listeners?
I think we pretty much covered it. There's always something, and I'm a sometimes my worst promoter, but there's a lot of people that I work with that are depending on our success. So, getting my website up there, talking about my courses. The other thing that we're trying to do is, get people to contact us to organize workshops in their area.
Okay, and I think your email, I have it here somewhere, is info@cityofangelspermaculture.com.
Yes, that's a good one to use.
Yeah, so info@cityofangelspermaculture.com. And it's cityofangelspermaculture.com is the website, and you can find out about courses and actually order t-shirts too.
That's true. That's true. And you can find us on Facebook under Permaculture Los Angeles. And of course, you can friend me on Facebook, Larry Santoyo.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Larry. This has been fun and insightful as well.
Actually, for me too. Thank you very much, Jill.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a Sustainable World Radio podcast. You can find us online at sustainableworldradio.com and also on iTunes. For more information about permaculture and ecology, visit the Sustainable World Media YouTube channel, where you'll find videos about permaculture, aquaponics, organic gardening, rainwater harvesting, and much, much more. Sustainable World Radio is a listener-supported program. If you like what we do, please consider making a donation to the show. I'm your host and producer, Jill Cloutier, and thank you so much for listening. Our first documentary, The Soil Solution, is now available at sustainableworldmedia.com. The Soil Solution is a 28-minute documentary film that explores the potential that healthy soil may hold in reversing climate change.